everybody. Welcome to GenUX. Today we are having on Chris Hanna from Walnut Hill. Very excited to have him. He's also one of our clients and he's doing some great work. So Chris, why don't you tell us a little bit about Walnut Hill, how it started, when you started it, why you started it, the who's, what's, when's, where's, and why's about Walnut Hill.
Thank you for having me. Chris Hanna, CEO of Walnut Hill Medical. I've been involved with launching new and innovative medical devices and medical device companies for the last 25 years. When you think medical devices, pacemakers, heart valves, knee replacements, hip replacements, spinal fusions, all of that type of equipment. But specifically, I launched Walnut Hill Medical around focusing on the challenges that new and innovative therapies face when they try to enter the U.S. market. As you can imagine, healthcare is very regulated in the U.S., and so there are quite a few hurdles, federal and state and private hurdles, that need to be overcome, and those sometimes take many years and a lot of money. And so having someone to shepherd folks through that is what I do. And then once you get on market, there are a whole host of other things that you need to watch out for from a commercialization standpoint. And so we help new and innovative therapies get on market and stay there. And the part on staying there is around prior authorization, insurance prior authorization. And that was the focus of the study that we engaged with you on. That happy to share the details of that as well.
That would be great, Chris. And, you know, at GenUX, we believe data isn't just about numbers. It's about, like, your intuition meeting that evidence, which is exactly what we're talking about here. And that's exactly what this series, Intrinsic Data, is all about. So, like you were talking about, when you first came to us, you had a massive data set, a few ideas about what could be in the data set, and this gut feeling that there was more beneath the surface. And what we needed to do was bring those insights to you, which brings me to my next question. When we started to work together, you came to us and you're like, I have this large data set and I think there's overlapping patterns and themes that are emerging, but I'm not a statistician and I have these theories, but I don't know what to do with them and I don't know how to, you know, get the data extracted. So tell me about what you thought was going to be in there and like why you thought it was what was in there was in there. If that makes sense.
It does. And I could go a couple of different directions, but where my mind goes with what you just said is you often hear folks say something happens a lot, or it happens often, or it never happens, or it always happens. And those words are squishy, right? And so we have tens of thousands of patients in our database for whom we have helped them secure prior authorization or from their healthcare insurance company to get access to a procedure that they were prescribed by their physician. And when we hear folks saying they're denied a lot, which it seems to be the case, we say, okay, let me figure out exactly what that means. How do I define that? Because what I want to do is work with the federal government, so Congress and Health and Human Services, to put together policies that help give patients access to certain therapies. And part of that is you've got to have data. And of course, when I've had these conversations in the past, they'll say, well, of course you're going to tell me that's what's happening because you want that to be fixed, right? So, okay, so I needed two things. One, I needed credibility. Somebody else outside my company looked at it and says, yes, this is exactly what's happening. And I need real numbers that are defensible because at some point they're going to say, let me see your data. And so that's exactly why I engaged your company and you did validate what it was we were seeing, but being able to define it.
Right. So our statistician, she went through your original, what I'm going to call hunches, but are really hypotheses, right? Uh-huh. And you had about, I want to say off the top of my head, I think there are about like, there are three main hypotheses and then there are about like 20 sub. And it turned out that all, they were like, and then I think this is happening. And then I think this is happening in the data. So she basically wrote code and she went through your data and she cleaned your data and she found out that the things that you thought were actually happening intrinsically were actually happening in your data set. And so your hypothesis were supported based on the data that you had just sitting at your fingertips. Without being a statistician, how does that make you feel? Like, that's pretty crazy that your brain did that. Like, is that, you know, just because you've been doing this for years and you kind of picked it up on it? Like, why do you think that you figured that out?
It's, you know, having done this for 25 years, you've just seen enough. I've lived long enough. I've seen that something is clearly happening here. And my clients were saying, this seems to be happening. This seems to be happening. I wanted to be able to respond to every stakeholder of saying, yes or no, this is happening, and put it in some context so that we can define it. So, for example, we'll have folks saying, well, patients were always getting denied. Well, we know that's not the case, right? Or at least half of them are not getting their cases. Well, are you sure about that, right? And how you define a lot. So some people define a lot as 5% of patients aren't getting access. Some people define that as a majority, more than 50% are not getting access. So I needed to know the real answer. And so what your statistician came up with was 30% of our patients right out of the gate, Medicare Advantage, were not getting access to their therapies. Now, I knew it was a lot, but that was a lot. And again, a lot, right? It's happening often enough. And understanding that there are a lot of dollars that go behind each one of those denials, and there are big companies and big motivators from a financial perspective. And so what I needed to know was, okay, so I knew there were a lot, 30%, that's a lot. But now when we file appeals, are we winning these appeals? Because we're going through tens of thousands of appeals for patients, and are we successful in getting access, those patients access to that therapy? And what we found out was, yes, it was a lot. And the way we defined a lot, the way your statistician came up with it is 70% of our appeals win. Like, are you kidding me? Like 70%, I would have not guessed that it was that high. I knew it was a bunch, but 70%. When we take patients' denials with their insurance carriers and we go file the appropriate appeals in the proper way, even if we have to take them to court, 70% of those cases win. Think about what that means. I give the analogy of if a judge, a regular judge in court, was overturned on appeal, their rulings were overturned on appeal 70% of the time. That is a huge failure in the judicial system, right? You can imagine people being convicted, right? That would mean that 70% were being released. 70%. Like, that's insane. What would happen to that judge if that were indeed the case, right? They'd be brought up on a million different charges. But from insurance, when we win 70% of the cases, they're like, okay. There's nothing, absolutely nothing, but 70%, that's just ridiculous. And so your statistician was able to go into all of our cases, look at all of these claims, and not only in the first time were they getting denied 30% of the time, but when we take those 30% and we fight and we go to insurance, 70% of the time we win. That's an incredible statistic that has been received extremely well with the folks that I've shared that study with.
Oh, so that was my next question is, now that you have the study and it's been assimilated and you have all the data behind it, and these, now that you can define like what big numbers are, right? So like your baseline is like, well, maybe 10% are getting denied, but it turns out it's 30. And then once they go in and they do a reauthorization request, they get 70% approval rates. Like, these are really big numbers. Like, you know, you would, when you're talking about data in stats specifically, alphas are usually set about at 0.05, which would be anything outside of 95% is an alpha. So that 0.05%. So when you're talking about 30%, like, denial rates, that's a very big part of like a data set. That's a pretty big part. So I just want to put that into perspective for some people so they would know like what that looks like. It's like, is big. So after you got the information back and you're like, oh my God, this is crazy. I know all this stuff. I didn't know I knew all this stuff, but now I know all this stuff for like in legit defined. It's out here. It's in the world. And you put the report together. What did you do with that? Who did you share it with? Like what happened after that?
It's, I'll tell you, but I'll also mention, as you said, that 30%. And the other piece of that, the percentage is some folks will go off with saying nobody gets approved, and they have it using a clinical study type or a statistical analysis. Well, that was an N of one. This case, your statistician took 1,200 patients that we had and followed them through the entire system. So we have an N of 1,200. When you think about clinical studies, especially in med device space, if you have 100, 200, 300, that's significant. We had 1,200, a fantastic data set. So what I did We've worked a lot with Congress in the past. So I went up to D.C., met with the DOC caucus, and there's both a Democrat and a Republican DOC caucus. But I met with those members and shared with them the statistics that your statistician came up with. And they were all aware, again, that this was a big problem. But is it really a big problem? How many people are really being affected by this? So I was able to share with them the details. And I think you have the chart that we put together, right? This chart yeah. that we put together. Yeah, you have that. So hopefully you can share that. There is current legislation trying to address Medicare Advantage prior authorization hurdles that are put in place that are preventing patients getting access to therapies. And so they're trying to resolve that issue. And as we went through that legislation, we took that legislation plus our statistics, plus our own experience, and we're offering suggestions to Congress with regard to policies that could help ensure that patients have a better access or a better chance for access to therapies. And that is concluded, I wouldn't say concluded, has resulted in multiple one-on-one meetings with Congress people. And we are now constructing language in partnership with Congress that provides for more accountability and transparency in the prior authorization process for Medicare Advantage policies so that patients have a better understanding of what it is they can expect when they choose a Medicare Advantage plan.
That's really cool. So the next question I was going to ask you is kind of around that topic. Like if this was Burger King and you could have it your way, now you know how old I am. Is this what you wanted? Was this your end goal for this topic? Or was there more? Is there more that you want to do with what you're doing? I mean, you've achieved so much in such a short period of time. I mean, I believe that we started this in February. The report was ready before June. You went to Congress in June. You've already been having these conversations. It's July. I mean, in Congress, for people who don't know, that is fast. That is really fast mm-hmm. that these conversations are happening. And there's been a lot. I don't know if you've seen a lot of the stuff that RFK has been putting out, but there's a lot of stuff on Instagram that's been talking about this prior auth topic. It's very, very hot right now. And right. I believe that you have a very big hand in that. So like I said, if this was Burger King and you could have it your way, what was your initial plan for this? What direction did you want it to go? What impact did you want to have? And maybe now, where do you want to see it going, where it can go based on the conversations that you are having?
Yeah, it's such a good question, because at the beginning, I just want to know if I was right. I mean, that was the main thing. Like, am I right? Because if I'm wrong, then I'll stop talking about it. But if I'm right, I want to figure out how we fix it. So, I don't know, being a guy, I just like to fix things, right? And so, So who is in charge of Medicare Advantage and their policies? Well, HHS, Health and Human Services, or Medicare, if you want to call it that. But who then gave them that access, which is Congress, right? So who really has oversight to Health and Human Services in Congress? That's the House Ways and Means Committee and the Senate Help Committee. But I knew a lot of folks in the House Ways and Means Committee, and so I was able to approach them with some of this information as they're trying to resolve this issue. My goal for this really is, I want to be able to, I'm going to start with this because I know that to get regulations through Congress, all of that could take a very long time, right? And let's just call it a year at best. I mean, I'd love to have something next year would be wonderful. If it was sooner, great, but that's Congress. So in the meantime, there are tens of thousands of patients who are not getting access to the therapies that they are entitled to. Think about this. Medicare, every single person pays taxes into Medicare. Your entire career, your entire working career. So imagine you spent all of that money over 20, 30, 40 years that you paid into that, and you don't have a chance to opt out of that, right? You've got to pay into it. You then decide to choose a Medicare Advantage plan, and you don't get access to the therapy that you're supposed to, and you paid into it your entire working life, right? That's really frustrating. Now, to fight then insurance carriers, you got to know how to. right? So what we're going to do, we are starting a foundation that we hope to secure corporate sponsorship as well as patient advocate sponsorship so that we can provide free educational videos, not only to the patients, but to their healthcare provider or their spouse, whatever the case is, so that you know how to fill out the forms, when to fill out the forms, what to say, what not to say when it comes to trying to get access to these therapies. We want to take what we know to get 70% of these approved, put them in the hands of patients so that they know how to handle this themselves, because it's going to be a while before this is resolved. And you can imagine, just like everything else, something might get resolved and then it'll manifest as something else, and then it'll manifest as something else. And so in the meantime, I want to make sure that those tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of Medicare Advantage patients who are getting no from their insurance carrier, know how to then push back to insist they get access to the therapies that they paid into their entire lives. So that's what we're doing. So we'll have that launch this fall. We'll probably launch that in DC, that foundation, so that we can start sharing with patients how they can be empowered with the education and knowledge to fight for themselves. And if they still don't have that wherewithal, ultimately, I'd love to be able to do that for them, but we'll have to see how it all works out come this fall.
That sounds amazing. So here's a question, just to like put it out there into the universe. If this is happening within Medicare and Medicaid, do you think it's happening across other, just your opinion, do you think it's happening within other prior auth requirements for things outside of there, just within insurance in general?
Yeah.
Opinion only. So yes,
it's actually harder. It's actually worse in private payer plans. That's actually more difficult. Now, the reason we chose Medicare Advantage is because you can't go up to Congress and boil the ocean. You can't fix everything. You've got to come up with a specific thing. Medicare Advantage, very specifically, is supposed to follow Medicare rules verbatim. And when they don't, that's where we kind of step in to fight. Okay. And so the Health Subcommittee on the House Ways and Means Committee has jurisdiction over Medicare Advantage. If I wanted to go after private payer plans, right, then I'd have to go to a different committee in the Senate that covers ERISA plans, right? And so there's kind of different jurisdiction. Jurisdiction is not a great word, but responsibilities within Congress is kind of divided up of who has authority over what. They all kind of work with each other, but ultimately one group is going to have full access. So with Medicare Advantage, I can go to Congress to implement or at least request implementation of transparency and accountability by Medicare Advantage plans. That was the, I'd say the cleanest route to go to affect it. Private payers, just the way our country is set up, private payers operate on a whole different set of rules. And you have up to 5,000 different private payers that are out there. I don't have the scale to do that. Medicare Advantage, if we can affect it at the federal level, applies to all Medicare Advantage plans. And so that's why we chose that route. But it's still a very big issue in this country. As anybody knows, if you've ever tried to get a procedure or a medication and your insurance company said no, half the time you might give up. But there are people out there willing to fight for you. And that's what we're doing. And that's what we'd like to bring more into the fold to help folks get access to the care that they wrote so rightfully deserve.
And speaking, like, just focusing on the place that you're living in right now, do you think that that might have a trickle down effect? Like, if you get this part of it through Congress, do you think that it could maybe like blend over into the private space? I mean, just from the work you're doing. Opinion only.
Yeah, I would say I think it'll have an influence, but you know, private plans, they can kind of do whatever they want within the boundaries of how private insurance works. It's just like regulating private industries. It's kind of, you have the same challenges when you get to at least to the federal level. Anybody that's participating in those federal programs have to follow certain rules. So I'd like to think that it would bleed over. I'll just say there's too much money at stake on the private payers that I'm not so sure that it'll make a dent for the average U.S. citizen, unfortunately.
It sounds like there's just a lot of nuances that, you know, like this isn't your focus of things, right? But this is the other part of it is. So I was just wondering what your thoughts were like, because you have a lot more, I think, insights to how the system works as opposed to someone who's just like watching this video for the first time, you know? So this is just such an interesting topic. And there's so much going on in it right now that I thought it was just something wonderful to talk about. And I love what you're doing with it. So as you're going through this and you're talking to Congress, like, what else are you looking into? Do you have any ideas of other data or other things from your data set that you can leverage? Or is there something that you've been thinking about within this space that you might have to look into and research to go forward to get more information, to get more, quote unquote, data street credit, to bring it to Congress and talk to them about what you can shape and what you can help and what you want to work towards?
Yeah, there are other topics, but on a prior authorization perspective, as you can imagine, when you go to Congress, and it's really interesting, especially in the House, as folks need to be reelected every couple of years, right? And so they're always aware that every 2 years they need to be reelected. It'd be like you reapplying for your job every 2 years. Can I keep my job? Can I keep my job? You've got to really pay attention to the people who vote for your job. Right. And so those are constituents. Right. So one of the things that we were looking at doing, which we haven't done yet, which is how big of what's the scope or scale of this issue by House district? So when I'm meeting with a congressperson, what's happening in that person's district? Because just think about it. If you had to reapply for your job every 2 years, you're going to do those things that help make sure you get to keep your job the next 2 years. And you're going to then, whoever has the power to say yes or no to you, you're going to make sure that their needs are met. And so I would ultimately like to scope our data set. 1,200 then starts to seem fairly small when it comes to over 400 districts in the country, right? It starts to get pretty small. So if we expanded it, or if we got data sets from each district, we could put something like that together to say it's estimated that, you know, Congressman so-and-so or Congresswoman so-and-so, this is how many Medicare Advantage patients are in your district. And here's what I can imagine that they're facing, the same types of denial rates. And I think they would be very interested in hearing from you with regard to the plan for resolving some of these issues. Ultimately, I'd like to get there if it's necessary. If we can get legislation signed without having to go that far, that's fantastic. But I anticipate that it'll probably take that level of detail.
Wow, that's a lot of detail. So, like, the other questions I was going to ask really circulate around, like, the data that you would need to collect, which you kind of just went into based on district. So you would want to break it down based on just district, or would you also want to base it on other factors in those people's districts? Or what other types of data would help you get your point across to the people you're speaking to in a very clear way? In this specific topic.
Yeah, I think about the aging demographic, right? I mean, when I think about an aging demographic, how many folks over the next few years will be Medicare eligible, right? And what is then also the trend, which is very high, of patients who are Medicare eligible who are choosing Medicare Advantage. Over 50% today of Medicare eligible patients are choosing Medicare Advantage plans, and for very good reason. Traditional Medicare, without getting too, it's not even political, regulatory, you have different parts of Medicare. But think about this, it's only limited benefits within your traditional Medicare. And most people who choose Medicare is really just, can I get a doctor and a hospital, and some drugs, which is Part D. Can I do can I go somewhere and get help? Is there somebody who can help me? And do I need any medications? Those are really the three main things that were there. But what's not in there is other types of support, like vision, like dental, like other type of ancillary wellness type programs. And so Medicare Advantage was designed by Congress to say, we're going to do all of these things. And then you all, meaning Medicare Advantage plans, can start adding a bunch of things around it so that the patient has basically one payment and gives you all these other services. So if you did traditional Medicare, you'd have to buy dental and vision, for example, right? Now under Medicare Advantage, you can get a one package, one payment, you get all of those benefits to it, is basically what that is. It's, if you wanted to look at it in general terms, it's like the privatization of Medicare is what that is. Yeah. Yeah. And it has great benefits to it. There are good reasons why it was created. But prior authorization was a power that was given to them by Congress to help manage utilization. And you can imagine that something going unchecked for too long, maybe folks take it a little too far, which is what seems to be the case. So let's kind of rein that back in.
That seems fair to me. Thank you for explaining that to everybody.
Sure.
So now that we know that there was like a big number of rejections and then a big number of, you know, you reapply and then you get accepted. And you brought that to a lot of people. It's really made an impact amongst those that you've talked to. So now that you're working towards your next steps, you mentioned some fundraising, you mentioned people getting involved and working with you in Congress. So tell us a little bit about what those next steps are, how people could engage with you. You're doing fundraising to raise awareness and education. So let's talk a little bit about that and tell me where people can find all that information from you and when it's coming out and all the good stuff.
Sure. Yeah. So to your point, the timeline's been quite short as we pull all of this together. Based off of feedback from Congress members as well as other industry partners, there's clearly an appetite for trying to resolve this situation. And even though that is very easy to identify, the solution very long and gets very, very complicated. And as you can imagine, that requires a lot of money, right, to put that together. And so what we've decided to do in just the last few weeks is to create a foundation, which we haven't created yet. We'll have that created here very soon, which will enable folks from a corporate perspective. So medical device companies, you ask any medical device company that where their therapy requires prior authorization, they'll know this situation dramatically. And so I want to talk to them to get some funding to put together this foundation, do patient training and their caregiver training, as well as advocacy work in DC to get this resolved. There are also quite a few private foundations and some government foundations who are trying to improve patient access to healthcare, right? And we all know some of the challenges that many of the disenfranchised face with regard to getting access to therapies. And so they're looking for solutions as well. So we want to put really a quasi-governmental private partnership coming together to empower patients today on how to make sure they get access to therapies that they are entitled to, as well as working toward the future so that our kids don't have to go through this situation. And all of us don't have to spend all of this money, not only for our health insurance, but all of this money just to get access to our health insurance. That is a hidden cost that really isn't identified anywhere. And that might be another study of just how much time and money is being spent on industry, government, and patient and provider side, all of these folks just trying to coordinate care via prior authorization approvals. So that's where we want to take everything. You can reach out to me on LinkedIn, Chris Hanna, walnuthillmedical.com. My email address is channa, and there's no H on the end, so channa at walnuthillmedical.com. We have quite a few videos out there on LinkedIn is where we spend the majority of our time. And so soon we'll have websites. We'll do a host of other things as well. But LinkedIn would be the easiest way to find us, or our website, walnuthillmedical.com. You can reach out to us there as well to participate in solving some of these really complex problems.
We're happy that you were willing to talk to us. Is there anything else you want to share that I didn't ask you about that's going on right now that's like a hot ticket item for you that you just want to like blast out into the universe and say to everybody that's watching?
The thing I'd say, which I taught my students, I used to teach U.S. health policy If you're not at the table, you're on it. And so if your voice isn't being loud and people aren't hearing you, your message will never be heard. And so show up from an advocacy perspective. And I can tell you, folks don't necessarily believe that talking with your congressperson makes a difference. It 100% does, absolutely does. And so, again, if you're not at the table, somebody else is going to be at the table eating your lunch. So you have to show up. And that's what we're trying to do, bring everybody together under one voice so that we can bring all of those people together to say, let's have a conversation about this. So be active in your own healthcare is so critically important. Nobody's going to advocate more than yourself.
That's so true. It's so true.